Highland Falls, El Paso, Clarksville, Watertown, and from other important military capitals around the globe, Eye on Defense brings the top military and defense issues into focus. Eye on Defense is proudly sponsored by Big Sarge Pre-Owned TA-50 Emporium and The Last Hope Jewelry and Pawn. And now, citizens of Earth, brace yourselves for the next episode of Eye on Defense. Defense, 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 defense.
All right, we're back, everybody. It's episode 244. This is 17 March. Nothing really good from CENTCOM X today, so I didn't do nothing from that. Only about four or five stories, maybe six. 20 minutes, 25, short episode. Again, we'll get straight to what's going on in the Middle East, Israel. Three stories. First, IDF chief says Hamas trying to hide fate of number three. As Gallant hints at Issa's death, this from Emmanuel Fabian, Times of Israel Today. IDF Chief of Staff Lieutenant General Herzi Halavi said on Sunday that Hamas is trying to hide the fate of Marwan Issa, the deputy commander of the terror group's military wing, who was targeted in Israeli strike last week, adding that the IDF is readying itself to operate in Rafah. At a press conference, Halavi also said the military has to discipline commanders who have acted contrary to protocols, in an apparent reference to Brigadier General Dan Gulfus, who offered comments addressed at politicians last week at a press conference without approval, and Brigadier General Barak Hiram, who ordered the demolition of a university used by Hamas in Gaza without approval. Now we'll get to this, the Issa issue. Speaking about last week's airstrike on Issa and other operatives in central Gaza, Halavi said that the IDF attacked senior Hamas commanders, whose fate Hamas tries very hard to hide. Here's a quote. We embarked on this operation after many days of complex planning, creating the operational conditions and gathering sufficient intelligence. This is a very important achievement for the IDF, a capability we have built over the years together with Shin Bet, a combination of high-quality intelligence and precise fire from the Air Force, which enables the elimination of senior officials underground. The attack is an expression of the IDF's ability to reach the most complex places at the right time with high precision. We continue this effort to eliminate senior officials. This is a major goal of the war. For his part, Defense Minister Yoav Gallant also hinted Sunday that the targeting of Israel was successful. Thanks to the ground operation, we reached information that led to eliminations and successes. Israel served as the deputy of Mohammed Deif, D-E-I-F, the head of the Hamas military wing, together with Hamas's leader in Gaza, Sinwar. They are believed to have masterminded the group's 7 October massacre in southern Israel that triggered the war. And now we'll get to this other thing with the two commanders. Apparently, to refer to commanders Gulfus and Hiram, we should call them generals Gulfus and Hiram, Halavi said that the IDF commanders, junior ones, and the more senior ones, of course, are commanding a difficult and complex war. In war, it is very important to allow commanders on the battlefield the freedom required to carry out their missions. I trust them and appreciate them very much. In the same breath, I say the obvious. It's impossible to fight when the discipline and rules are not clear and not strict. The balance between them is key to success. A commander cannot override an order without authorization if there is no operational, clear, and urgent need or reason for this. Commanders who violate rules will be investigated and dealt with as soon as possible. This is our duty. And that's it for that story. On the negotiation front, for hostage negotiations, Israel's negotiating team is expected in Doha on Monday after Security Cabinet is said to approve Sunday night the dispatch of a delegation to Qatar for indirect talks about a temporary truce in Gaza and a hostage release. This delegation is led by Mossad Director David Barnot. He received a general mandate to conduct negotiations via Qatari and Egyptian mediators. Some of the issues related to negotiations would need weighed and proved by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Defense Minister Yoav Gallant separately, a report said. That's it. Last, the German Chancellor Olaf Scholz was in Israel. Germany Scholz meets Prime Minister Netanyahu, calls for hostage deal with long-lasting ceasefire. In Jerusalem on Sunday, today, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz said Israel is fighting for a legitimate goal. However, he said Palestinian death toll is extremely high. Many would argue too high. He called for a negotiated two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, saying terror cannot be defeated with military means alone. For his part, Prime Minister Netanyahu, in his address, said the two leaders had a very serious conversation, an important conversation among friends. We also agreed that Hamas has to be eliminated, Netanyahu said, noting that if the terror group is allowed to stay in Gaza, it will regroup and reconquer as they have vowed to repeat 7 October massacre again, again, and again. During the meeting, Netanyahu said his German counterpart asked him to do more to protect civilians in Gaza during the ongoing war and to allow more humanitarian aid for Palestinians to enter the Gaza Strip. Netanyahu stressed that Israeli troops would not go ahead with plans to invade Rafah, which was approved on Friday, without civilians being able to leave. Here's a quote. Our goal in eliminating the remaining terrorist battalions in Rafah goes hand in hand with enabling civilian population to leave Rafah. It's not something that we will do keeping the population locked in place. He also added a potential peace agreement with the Palestinians that makes Israel so weak and unable to defend itself would set peace backward and not forward. That's about it for that. Next. Here's an interesting story from USNI. I haven't done a story from them in a while. Russia, China, and Iran finished drills off the Gulf of Oman. Derzhan Mazadar, 14 March. Russia, China, and Iran completed an at-sea phase of Sea Security Belt 2024 exercise on Thursday near the Gulf of Oman and carried out a shore phase along with a debriefing in the Iranian city of Chabahar, with the drill scheduled to end on Friday, a couple days ago. The drills began on Monday with the arrival of Russian and Chinese ships to Chabahar. The ships then departed on Tuesday to begin an at-sea phase of the exercise. This exercise is the sixth iteration of the one that began in 2018. This year's iteration is the first to allow observers from other countries, namely Pakistan, Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan, Oman, India, and South Africa. Also known as the Global Majority. You've heard it called the Global South. Now people are calling it the Global Majority. Moving on. The Iran State News Agency, IRNA, reported that the purpose of the exercise is to expand multilateral cooperation among the participating countries to show their ability to jointly support world peace, maritime security, and to create a maritime group in the future. More than 20 ships are participating in the exercise, or participated in the exercise, with two warships from the Russian Navy Pacific Fleet Cruiser and Fleet Flagship RFS-001. If I say a number of the ship, that means I can't pronounce the ship. Destroyer RFS Marshall 543, those are the two ships. RFS-011, RFS-543, one's a flagship cruiser and one's a destroyer. Both ships left their home port in Vladivostok on 22 Jan for a scheduled deployment in the Indo-Pacific and Middle East. For the drills, the People's Liberation Army Navy from China deployed the 45th China Naval Escort Task Force, which includes destroyer CNS-118, frigate CNS-547, and fleet oiler CNS-902. As in previous exercises, Iran's participation consists of both Iranian Navy and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, Navy. Among the Iranian Navy ships taking part in the drills were frigates Iris-71, Iris-75, and Iris-76 frigates, while IRGC ships included corvettes FS-313-01 and PC-313-01, fast attack craft P-31304, and auxiliary ship the Mahmoudi. There you go. On Tuesday, ships from three countries conducted, the countries obviously were Russia, China, and Iran, conducted tactical maneuvering drills and subsequently carried out live fires against surface targets and aerial targets, simulating unmanned aerial vehicles, according to a Russian Ministry of Defense news release. The firing drills also included nighttime firing. Very impressive. On Wednesday, the ships were divided into two task groups, one composed of Russian and Iranian ships and the other composed of Chinese and Iranian ships, to carry out a hostage rescue drill, with two Iranian ships playing the role of a hijacked merchant ship. That's a very good story right there. Moving on. I wonder what you guys think about this story. EU sprinkles $560 million U.S. over defense firms to grow ammunition output. Tom Kingston, Defense News, 15 March. The EU has named a host of local ammunition firms it will supply with more than €500 million, or $560 million, in combined funding to help them beef up production in a bid to push the bloc's annual output of shells to 2 million a year by the end of 25. Remember, they wanted to do 1 million in 1 year. Now they want to do 2 million a year. I assume they're talking about 155 here. Amid complaints from Kiev, Ukraine, that it cannot compete with Russia's constant shelling, the EU admitted in January it had fallen short on a pledge made last year, last March, to by time this March, to supply 1 million shells a year, which they're not doing. Here's what their new plan is. Instead, member states would hand over just 524,000 shells, half of the promised batch, by March of 24, according to EU Foreign Affairs Chief Joseph Borrell. What does that mean? If you're in the EU, you got to turn in all your 155s to those folks, I guess. Those shells will be coming courtesy of the first two phases of the EU's so-called ASAP plan to use €2 billion to buy up existing European inventories to make joint new purchases from EU manufacturers. So if you give up all your shells, you'll be paid for them, I suppose. And then phase three of the plan announced Friday involves a $513 million to help firms improve facilities as well as co-finance investments with the private sector for a total investment of €1.4 billion. So these are the projects for investment: explosives, powder, shells, missiles, testing and reconditioning certification. The lion's share of the funding will go to explosives and powder. $124 million for explosives and $248 million for powder. As the bottlenecks and supplier ease, the EU hopes to increase the annual production of explosives in the EU by over 4,300 tons and the production of powder by 10,000 tons. I don't know how to build bombs or artillery shells, but I guess that's a lot. Here's the firms who have applied for and received cash to boost explosives production: Greece's Hellenic Defense Systems, Slovakia's MSM Export, Norway's Turing Nobel, France's Eurinco France, Sweden's Eurinco Bofors, and Hungary's N7 Holding. And for powder production, there are 17 firms. Among those are Rheinmetall, Nexter, Namo, and Eurinco, all heavy hitters. Deals for the funding will be signed in May, EU says. Excuse me. Overall, the member states involved in this are Greece, Slovakia, Norway, France, Sweden, Germany, Italy, Hungary, Latvia, Finland, Spain, Romania, Belgium, and Czechia. Spokesman for the Aerospace Security and Defense Industries Association of Europe welcomes the deal, but claimed the EU is bulking up funding with money taken from budget of the European Defense Fund, which is a body charged with funding defense technology in the bloc. I don't care about that. It's a lot of money, man. A lot of money they're putting into this. I mean, a lot of contracts are going to be signed, right, to build all these rounds. And I'm just going to say it. It's almost like peace would get in the way of this. All of a sudden, the war ends. Like, what? We signed all these contracts to build 2 million rounds. Now what are we going to do? Cancel the contracts. Oh, we can't do that. Too big to fail? I don't know. They should just, enough of this Ukraine thing. They should just start negotiating. Moving on. This is a good story. Air Force moves out of hypersonic cruise missile flight testing in FY25. I'm going to read that again. Air Force moves out on hypersonic cruise missile flight testing in FY25. Air Force Secretary Frank Kendall last year said the service is more committed to the hypersonic attack cruise missile than the service's other fast flying design, the air launch rapid response weapon. So let me get this right. The Air Force has got two hypersonic efforts. Okay, the Navy's got one and the Army's got one. That's four in the DOD. For the love of God, can't the United States figure this hypersonic weapon thing out? I mean, let's just do one, for crying out loud. We got four parallel efforts. Let's just do one and then move on from there. I think that China and Russia are eating everybody's lunch on this. We can't seem to figure it out. Moving on. Breaking defense, Michael Morrow, 14 March. The Air Force is looking to move ahead with flight testing for new hypersonic cruise missile in FY25. We are working to mature. Whose quote is this from? Oh, it's from a top service official. Okay, this is from Frank Kendall. We're working to mature the hypersonic attack cruise missile to critical design, along with other development activities to enable flight testing activities in FY25. The hypersonic attack cruise missile is an air-breathing scramjet-powered cruise missile that can fly at speeds greater than Mach 5 and maneuver its way to a target. The Air Force awarded RTX subsidiary Raytheon a contract for the weapon in 2022, with the scramjet to be provided by Northrop Grumman. The hypersonic attack cruise missile draws from previous work done with DARPA and continues a partnership with Australia. The service has previously said it wants to field the weapon by FY27. That's like 3 years away. Budget documents ask for $517 million to continue the project in 25, and project total R&D spending of roughly $2.49 billion through FY29. An Air Force spokesperson additionally told Breaking Defense that the flight test activities are included in the FY25 budget, but that exact details of the program milestones and schedules cannot be released at this time. This effort, the hypersonic attack cruise missile, it's one of two hypersonic weapons under development by the Air Force. The other is the air-launched rapid response weapon, horrible name, made by Lockheed Martin, which consists of a hypersonic glide vehicle mounted on a rocket. A little bit about that. Air Force Secretary Frank Kendall told lawmakers the service is more committed to the hypersonic attack weapon than the air-launched rapid response weapon, particularly considering that the hypersonic attack, hypersonic attack cruise missile is smaller, can be launched from more platforms. What can they launch the hypersonic attack cruise missile from? The F-15E and the FA-18F, that's what they can do it. The Army and Navy are jointly working on a separate hypersonic weapon, though the projects have been set back by delays. The Navy is additionally developing an air-launched hypersonic ship killer called the Hypersonic Air-Launch Offensive Weapon. Air-surface missile. And, of course, the Army's got the long-range hypersonic weapon artillery piece. During a House hearing on Tuesday, Jeffrey McCormick, senior intelligence analyst at the National Air and Space Intelligence Center, said that Russia has deployed hypersonic weapons in the war with Ukraine, but noted China leads Russia in support and infrastructure and total inventory. Both Moscow and Beijing are thought to be ahead of Washington in hypersonic weapon technology, which I alluded to earlier. And last story, it's an Army story, a budget story. I figured I saw some stuff in this article that we didn't get to with the first one we did, so... last story here, Ashley Roquet, 14 March, from artillery to IVAS, new starts and program pivots included in Army's 2025 budget. We knew all this. when the Army unveiled the 25 budget request early in the week, the big news revolved around the termination of the artillery launcher, IRCA, and the reshuffling of dollars to the aviation portfolio. They killed FARA. They're killing Raven and Shadow. We know that. But here's this thing that I didn't know. The air defense continues to be a hot topic for the service. The Army has released a prototype plans for the new multi-domain artillery cannon system, MDACS, MDACS, that builds off Air Force Research Laboratory Strategic Capabilities Office investments. I guess that's their version of RICTO. The Army envisions a prototype will include a multi-domain artillery cannon, multi-function precision radar, multi-domain battle manager and hypervelocity projectiles, and an ammo handler vehicle. Here's a quote. MDACS complements existing air missile defense systems and provides integrated and standalone defense against a broad range of targets. It will provide the joint force with the defense of fixed and semi-fixed sites against cruise missiles and unmanned aircraft systems, while significantly increasing magazine depth and reducing cost per engagement. The plan, according to budget documents, is to spend under $67 million in FY25 to kick off the initiative. It will use the integrated battle command system and conduct a series of flight tests culminating in a battery operational assessment in FY2028, 6 years away. No, 4 years away. So even though it's got the name Multi-Domain Artillery Cannon System, it's an air defense system. That's what's confusing. It doesn't say what type caliber round it is. Anyway, that's new. I've never heard that before. Now let's get to precision strike stuff that we know about. The Army's planning to field its baseline precision strike missile this year, which I call Increment 1. The new weapon is designed to be fired from, of course, we know, M142 HIMARS and M270A2 MLRS. It can strike targets 500 kilometers away, which is 300 miles. But it's also pursuing other upgrades to this precision strike missile. Here are the other increments. Precision strike missile increment 2 with a multi-mode seeker known as a land-based anti-ship missile seeker to enable the missile to strike maritime targets. There's going to be an increment 3 with enhanced lethality payloads, whatever that means, and an increment 4, which can fly more than 1,000 kilometers, which is 600 miles. Then you got some tank stuff in here. I don't care about the tank stuff. We already know that. IVAS. We'll talk about IVAS. Army budget documents do not paint a complete picture for service plans for the IVAS, Integrated Visual Augmentation System, which we talk about quite often. However, FY25 budget justification documents do note a couple of program items. Here's what I'm going to talk about, the price point. The growing IVAS price point has been a program focal point, with a 1.0 version is $46,000. The 1.1 version, remember the 1.0 version is the one that is horrible, that they're going to field to like recruiting stations in the schoolhouse. Just, I don't want to say it's a waste of money, but $46,000 for that. Now the 1.1 version, the one, the better one that they're going to give to the strike brigade supposedly, is $62,000. Now, the 1.2 version, which they're calling IVAS Next, I mean, IVAS Next, we don't have IVAS now. We have IVAS Next. I'm being very sarcastic tonight. Anyway, that sucker is $81,000. 1.2 version is $81,000, I think. Yes. So for FY25, the Army's asking for lawmakers for $255 million to purchase 3,160 units next year, each one costing $81,000. However, the actual per unit cost could drop down to $42,000 by the time the Army signs a modified deal with Microsoft in June of 25. So I don't know what to say about all this. Is that a good bargain, $81,000? And if it is a bargain, if it's not a bargain, it's $42,000, which is half the cost. I'm not trying to beat up on IVAS. Believe it or not, I'm actually an IVAS fan, but I'm not sure if it's ready. But the Army has not killed it. Apparently, last summer, the test they did at Fort Drum was pretty encouraging, and they're continuing to modify it. So anyway, that's what the budget documents look like, for better or for worse. Should I get to the tanks? I'll get to the tanks. Last year, the Army upended plans for the incremental M1 Abrams upgrade. Remember the SEP V3? And they were going to go to SEP V4, Abrams System Enhancement Package Version 4. Instead, they're not going to do SEP V4. The official said the goal is to work on a more ambitious overhaul called the M3E1. They're going to reduce weight and logistics burden while increasing protection. New budget documents detail initial plans to ramp up development spending on M1E3. General Dynamics Land System is the prime contractor. They're going to spend, or they're requesting $246 million in FY25 to move out with M1E3. Just so you know, in the budget this year, FY24, which is not approved, they ask for $96 million. So $96 million in 24. Next year, they want $246 million for M1E3. And that's it. I'll stop there. What's the time? 24 minutes. That's good. So that's it. 24 minutes, not a long episode. This is episode 244 in the books. Thank you very much for listening and good night.